Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Yisai. So we're learning Maral's Netzach Yisroel. We are, well, more specifically, this year has been in Maral's Netzach Yisroel Perek Hei. That's what the whole, that's what we've been doing the whole time, pretty much. We're in Perek Hei. If by some strange occurrence you're following in a Sefer, then we are in the paragraph that begins Vida. We're in the middle of a discussion here. The Maharal is in the middle of explaining to us the depth behind the Kamtza's plot. Bar Kamtza, I'm sorry. When he wanted to instigate the Roman emperor against the Jewish people, what he did was he told him to send a korban to the Beis HaMikdash and see if the Jews accept it or reject it. If they reject it, it's a sign that they don't consider themselves subordinate to him. Now, the Jewish people certainly do accept korbanos sent by non-Jews, and they certainly do. We certainly do offer up korbanos on behalf of non-Jews. And as we've seen, the Beis HaMikdash is not only an entity of the Jewish people, it's an entity that is serving the entire world. It's what grants, the way the Maharal put it, it's what grants the entire world its shleimus. And therefore, he said there was this underlying feeling, sense, even of the conquerors of the Jewish people, they did not just go ahead and automatically destroy the Beis HaMikdash. The Romans had conquered the Jewish people and were ruling over them, and there was also tension. For plenty of time, before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it was only destroyed when the Jews, when their actions did not warrant having a Beis HaMikdash anymore. So now, again, Bar Kamtza's plot was, he had the ruler send this korban, and what he did was, he made a little nick in its lip. The non-Jews did not consider this a mum, did not consider this a blemish that disqualifies the korban. But we do. And therefore, when it arrived, the Kohanim said, this was Bar Kamtza's plan, and this is indeed how it played out. The Kohanim said, we can't offer this korban. And their claim that it was blemished didn't go over well because it had a tiny nick in the lip. It was taken as an excuse. And this is what got the ball rolling toward the Churban. So now, the Maharal explains as follows. He says that there was a subtle underlying dynamic here. There's an undercurrent here. There's a certain tension in the Beis HaMikdash itself. It creates a certain tension for the rest of the world. Why? Because on the one hand, it is there for the world at large. On the other hand, the presence of the Beis HaMikdash also manifests the place of Hashem's people at the top of that pyramid. Since they're the ones most directly connecting, they're the most direct recipients of the Ashras HaShchinah. The Shechinah is primarily connecting with them, and the rest of the world finds its place lowered down on the pyramid. And therefore, on the one hand, the Beis HaMikdash is of great benefit to the rest of the world. On the other hand, as long as there's a Beis HaMikdash, it remains manifest that the Jewish people, Hashem's people, are actually at the top of the pyramid. They're in a superior place. Now, this, theoretically at least, again, on the conceptual level, does not have to be perceived as a threat because this is something spiritual. But to the conqueror, this was a conflict with his sense of Rome is the top of the world. So as soon as he would pick up on that dynamic, as long as the Beis HaMikdash was simply a place of worship of the Jewish people, which also benefited the rest of the world, he doesn't mind enjoying the benefits. But as soon as he picks up on the fact that the Beis HaMikdash actually manifests the superiority of Hashem's people, this would already be a problem for him. So listen how the Maharal says that comes to set it up. He gives a lot of profundity, a lot of depth, spiritual depth, to this scoundrel's deeds and intent. He explains like this. He said, the rest of the world versus the Jewish people is kind of like the body versus the neshama. Now, therefore, he says, in terms of a body, if we're just talking physically, you can have a body that is perfectly robust, that's perfectly healthy. And if you're talking physical, this body is in perfect shape. But spiritually, it can be a mess. Now, the spiritual dimension is Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people. For the Jew, a physical body without the inside, without the spirituality also well developed, a healthy physical body without a healthy spiritual inside, without a healthily developed neshama, is something that's sorely lacking. That isn't something perfect. Whereas, for the rest of mankind, the body, there's also a certain element of nefesh that's involved in the body, but whatever it is, the body, if it's in a perfect state, and this person is in a perfect state, that's all there is to it. You don't need more. So perfect physicality provides perfection to the rest of the world, but not to the Jewish people. The Jewish people, a perfect physicality is just the beginning. But if you're lacking the spiritual dimension, then it really isn't worth much. It's considered a very deficient person. So this is actually represented in the different standards of blemishes, the Maharal tells us. He says the lips represent the spirituality of man. Why? Because it's through the mouth. We see this in the Zohar, we see this in many sources. It's the mouth that expresses the greatness of man. It's the mouth that expresses the greatness of man. This is where man's wisdom comes forth. That's why, if you're familiar with the way things are classed, with the way the physical world is classed in earlier literature, you have Demim, Tzemeach, Chai, and Medaber. You have inanimate, like rocks. You have Tzemeach, that's plants. Chai, that's already life, animals. Medaber. Then you have man, who is termed as Medaber, the speaker. This is the Chavis HaVav. As many other sources, we see that the supremacy of man, the higher level of man, the spirituality of man, is expressed in the mouth. That is where man demonstrates that he is not just another beast. He is not just another more intelligent animal. Right? This is why we have an unklus, right, when the pasuk says, Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, Hashem breathed a spirit of life into man. Unklus translates there as ruach memalula, a spirit that could speak. Speech is considered the characteristic of man versus animal, because speech is really where the spirituality of man is expressed. That's why the Koyach HaDibur is considered to be, the power of speech is considered to be on a higher spiritual level, more powerful spiritually than just deeds. Just as a side point, as an anecdote. I once came home from school when I was in first grade. This is something that left an impression on me as a first grader. I once came home from school in first grade. Some kids have been name-calling, calling some other kids' names, whatever it is, could complain to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe said, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never harm me. Another famous poem. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never harm me. I thought that was great. I came home and I told it to my father, hey, you know my Rebbe said today, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never harm me. So my father actually responded very seriously, and he said, no, he said, it's actually not true. He said, I would say it like this. Sticks and stones might break my bones, but words harm the most. Words can cause much deeper harm. This is just and we all know this, right? Words, a broken bone, a year later you don't remember it. Words can have everlasting damage. This is just one example of the more far-reaching power of words over the physical body. And therefore, it's the mouth that is the expression of man's greater powers, of man's spirituality. So the Maharal says something interesting. He says, for the rest of the world, an animal whose entire body is in perfect shape is considered unblemished. If there's something wrong with the mouth, we're not really too concerned about that. The physical element, the physical ingredient of the animal is in perfect shape. But for the Jewish people, a blemish of the mouth is a blemish in the whole system, right? That's also, we talk about it in terms of midas, etc., right? A person who has a problem with his mouth has a very, very big spiritual problem. And therefore, this is symbolized in the demonim of the blemishes of a behemoth. An animal that has a blemish in its mouth is considered to be very severely blemished. We cannot bring such an animal as a korban. So now, this is why the Jewish people cannot accept this korban. We do not bring offer an animal that has a blemish in its mouth. Now, here the Maharal is the question. Okay, so why did that have to make the ruler upset? Why could they just not, the Kohanim, simply explain to the ruler's agents that yes, in Jewish law, they could show them sources. In Jewish law, a blemish to the mouth disqualifies the korban. So the Maharal says, here we come back to what we were discussing before. This is a deep point. The Maharal says, on the contrary, that itself is what would anger the Roman ruler. Because again, what is the significance of the fact that for the rest of the world, a perfect body with a blemished mouth is fine, whereas for Hashem's people, a blemished mouth is a severe disqualification? The reason for that is because basically, by telling him that, you're telling him, this is fine for you because you are basically body, physicality. It's not fine for us because we have a whole spiritual dimension that's expressed in the mouth. In other words, what's it expressing? It's expressing the superior standing of the Jewish people. The Maharal says that itself would have been taken as a very great offense by the Roman ruler. To say that that this point, that we have a whole dimension, a whole added dimension of that needs to be perfect, would itself be bringing home the point that even though the Jewish people are subdued, are conquered, are paying tribute to the Roman emperor, they actually still are living in a reality where they are on top, which is the truth, which is the truth. And therefore, the Kohanim understood that they were actually in a checkmate. This was Bar Kamtz's diabolical plan. The Kohanim understood that they were actually in a checkmate. They can't. They explain why they can't accept it. If they don't explain, it looks like they're just making excuses. If they explain, then that itself is going to be taken as even that much more offensive. And therefore, yes, Bar Kamtza successfully maneuvered them into a checkmate. Now, what was the end of this story? The end of this story was that the Chachamim decided, you know what? This is obviously a matter of pikuach nefesh. This is very dangerous. And therefore, we're going to bring the korban anyways. It has a blemish. We're going to bring the korban anyways. But there was an old veteran kohen there. His name was Rabbi Zachariah ben Kevutal. And he said, no, we can't do that because this can cause a widespread misunderstanding that such a blemish is actually okay. So then they said, okay, we have no other choice. If so, let's kill Bar Kamsa. But he said, no, you can't do that either, because that would also, even if it's warranted to kill him, you're going to create the impression that a person who blemishes a carbon, that's the reason you're killing him. Now, these were concerns that were not really, this was not really the place for them. There really was a danger facing Klal Yisrael then. And therefore, the Chachamim later said, meaning, Zechariah ben Kavutal's humility, meaning his fear to tamper with halacha at all in a situation where it seemed quite warranted, hechriva as Beis Mikdashenu. That's what caused the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, what it seems to be saying is a certain admonition, a certain criticism of Rabbi Zechariah, that because of his extra piety that was applied in this place, the Beis HaMikdash ended up destroyed. But the Maharal says that actually this was really just a way of expressing that Hashem had a plan. Hashem had a plan, and Hashem was going to make his plan happen. Unfortunately, the decision was already there that the Beis HaMikdash had to be destroyed, and therefore, yes, it came about through this man's humility. But the point is, on the contrary, once Hashem's plan is in place, then uncanny things will come to make it happen. Meaning this wasn't so logical. It shouldn't have happened, right? The danger was clear. They should have taken one of these measures to prevent the danger. But since Hashem's plan was already in place, it wasn't going to help. The Gezeirah was already in effect, and Hashem was not going to let it be held up. We'll see other interesting examples of this with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. But we'll end here for tonight.